I was doing these little jobs to kind of, I thought of it as like stepping stones towards my greater goal. And along the way, I was able to, you know, get some real experience I could reference on my LinkedIn or my resume or in other jobs that I was reaching out to in the future, like freelance jobs. And it also gave me a way to make money while I was still learning these skills. And there's, I mean, a number of other benefits too beyond that, but those were kind of like the main ones.
When you're first getting started in the web design field, especially if you're someone who's learning on your own, it can be a little bit intimidating. There are so many courses out there and so many opinions on what to do or not to do, which online courses to take and which to stay away from, what's worth it and what's not worth it. We're talking today with Laurence Bradford of Learn to Code with Me. Laurence started out on her web development journey years ago on her own, like many of you. She didn't go to school for it. In fact, she wasn't doing anything related to the tech industry whatsoever. But she gave it a go. She started taking online courses and she figured out a way to do it. And now today, she runs a great platform to teach you how to do the same at learntocodewith.me. I want to encourage you to go there and check it out as you listen to this next episode. Hey, I just want to say I'm so thankful that you're here with me today on the Self-Made Web Designer podcast. Take a second and subscribe and leave some feedback and a rating for me. It will help me to know how to help you better in the future, and it will help other people to find this podcast to help them on their journey as web designers as well. All right, I don't want to take any more time before we jump into this conversation with Laurence because I know that you are going to benefit from it. Are you ready? Here we go. Awesome. We are here with Laurence Bradford. Laurence is the leader and creator of Learn to Code with Me. She's been called the patron saint of coding, just an awesome person who has done a lot for people who are trying to learn how to break into the tech industry and learn to code. Laurence, thank you so much for being with us here today on Self-Made Web Designer.
Hey, Chris, thank you for having me. I'm laughing at that quote because I know exactly who said that, and I know it's on my website. And that was actually one of my podcast guests who, well, I later had him on the show. His name's Brian, and he is just has such an awesome story. And I love that you're like, you have a podcast too, helping people get into tech and helping people get into design. And I love how we're able to help people change their lives through technology.
Yeah, 100%. I'd love to hear some of your background and the story of how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, for sure. So I was not technical whatsoever growing up. I played some computer games on my, you know, computer that we had as our like our home computer. Funny enough, my dad was in technology. He's always worked in technology my whole life, but maybe because I was like kind of a rebellious teenager and preteen, I didn't want to do anything that like my parents thought was cool because, you know, I had that sort of attitude, I think, when I was younger. I just was never drawn to it until after college. So in college, I studied history and economics. I tell the story fairly often because I think it really paints a picture of how not savvy I was or unsavvy I was with tech. For my freshman year of college, I was actually put in this remedial computer, like basic computer usage course, because I did so poorly on the computer competency, like orientation exam. You know, when you're a freshman in college, they give you these like exams to see your placement on a few core things. And most people will just place high enough. They don't have to take these courses. And it was like a no credit course that I had to take because I did so bad on the computer literacy part. So I was really bad with technology. And after I studied college, I ended up going to Southeast Asia, Thailand specifically, to teach English. At the time, I thought I wanted to pursue a career in economic development, specifically in Southeast Asian countries. After I was done teaching, I ended up getting an internship at a Thai think tank called, oh boy, it was called TDRI, the Thailand Development of, oh gosh, I'm trying to remember the acronym now, Thailand Development Research Institute. And I went there afterwards, it was in Bangkok. And within 2 weeks of being at that internship, it was like, I guess it was maybe a little more than an internship because it was paid, but it was something like that. I realized I did not want to be there. I was like, oh my goodness, this is not the kind of career that I want to pursue. I cannot see myself working in this area for my life. Like, I'll be miserable. Heck, I knew I would be totally bored out of my mind if I stayed there even just like a few more months. So I was like, oh my goodness, you know, what am I going to do? Because my plans are totally derailed and I have this degree in history and economics. I don't want to go back to grad school because I don't know what I even want to do. And I don't want to spend more money, you know, going back to school to do something else and getting a degree when I don't know what I'm going to use it for. So I began Googling and just like seeing what kind of jobs I could get without going back to college that were high paying. I mean, that was kind of like my only really criteria was something that can, you know, has a high earning potential and something I don't have to go back to college for or a master's degree or whatever, because I was just really done with school. I had spent a few months studying for the GRE, which is like kind of like the SATs, but to get into graduate school, because again, I thought I was going to go to graduate school for economic development. So I was just like, I'm done with school. I'm done with studying for these exams that have no real world value, like the GRE. And I want to learn something that I can actually use and get paid for. So of course, I stumble upon technology and coding probably within like 2 minutes of Googling. And one thing led to another. And well, a lot happened between then and there. That would have been back in 2013. But yeah, here I am today.
That's awesome. So tell me about the process where you went from knowing that I want to do this in coding and development to feeling like, okay, I'm now ready to jump out and try to find some work for this.
Yeah. So when I started learning, I was still working at this position in Thailand, and it was really advantageous, I guess, now looking back on it, because at this point, I was living totally by myself. Like, I had other friends in Thailand that I met while teaching, but all of them, for the most part, left or they lived far away, like a few hours away. So I couldn't like just hang out with them on weeknights or whatever. So I was in this like foreign country, totally alone, without any friends, and it actually painted a great opportunity to spend a lot of time learning and taking these online courses, which is what I started doing. Also, bear in mind, like the time difference is like 12 hours. So all of my like family and other people I would talk to back in the United States were on a totally different schedule than me. This was totally unintentional, but I think it just did end up working out in my favor as far as learning goes. So I spent the next few weeks, I was working, I was also learning these coding skills. I end up then going back home, knowing that I wanted to pursue this further. And there kind of wasn't really a point for me to keep staying in Thailand. At this point, I'd been in Thailand for 9 months. I was also sort of ready to head back on home and see everyone. So I ended up going back home to Pennsylvania. I grew up in this town called Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which is about an hour and 15 minutes north of Philadelphia. It's on the East Coast side. So it's like pretty close to New York, far from Pittsburgh. And I started to apply to jobs online as soon as I got back, more or less. Now, these weren't jobs like full-time tech jobs at Google. No, nothing like that. Basically, I would just use Craigslist to find little website jobs in my area or remote. But I looked at both. But I was trying to find little things that I could do to have someone give me a chance and start to just build up my work experience in this area. Because one lesson I learned from my whole like GRE studying, economic development, all of that debacle, which I was pursuing for 2 years, I think since my junior year of college, that's what I thought I wanted to do until about a year after I graduated. So actually junior, maybe even 3 years, I knew I need to get real work experience in this field before I fully commit to it. I do not want to make a similar misstep that I did with this whole economic development thing. So it was like, I was like on a mission to get some kind of real world work experience to see if this was something I could really do or not.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you jumped into it fairly quickly after only having what it sounds like a month or two of learning, and you were just ready to go looking for jobs.
Well, yeah, yes, but I definitely have to emphasize that these were small jobs. These were like whatever you want to call contract work, side gigs, freelance, small jobs. These were not, I was not working full-time at a tech company as a software engineer. I was doing these little jobs to kind of, I thought of it as like stepping stones towards my greater goal. And along the way, I was able to, you know, get some real experience I could reference on my LinkedIn or my resume or in other jobs that I was reaching out to in the future, like freelance jobs. And it also gave me a way to make money while I was still learning these skills. And there's, I mean, a number of other benefits too beyond that, but those were kind of like the main ones.
Yeah, that's great. And you know, I appreciate the fact that you were going for smaller jobs and things that probably weren't too daunting, but I can imagine that there was probably some fear when you first reached out to these folks. How did you overcome that? What gave you the confidence to just go for it?
Yeah, I feel like at that point, I didn't really have any other option. So I knew I couldn't use my history degree, as sad as that makes me to say, because I spent all this money getting this history degree. But I knew that if I were to really like use it, I would either have to go back to graduate school to get some other kind of degree to supplement it, or do a career switch that would be even harder to break into. Because I think I did just keep reminding myself that there's a huge demand for tech workers. So I think that just helped me feel more confident. Like, okay, like the jobs that I'm going after, maybe I'm underqualified, maybe I don't have the experience yet, but there is this industry demand for people with these skills. So if there is so much like demand and not enough people to fill these positions, that could give me a better shot. And another thing that actually helped me feel better, and this is interesting because I feel like someone could take this statistic or this fact and go two ways with it, but I knew that, and again, this would have been in 2013, that the number of women compared to men in tech roles was significantly less. At the time, it could have been like 80-20. I think it depended on which profession specifically you were looking at. I don't know the current numbers with 2020. I do think it's a bit more even now. You know, over the last 7 years, I think it is. I'm not 100% sure. It may not be. But anyway, knowing that also made me feel more confident because I knew that I would perhaps stand out more compared to other people that were maybe going for it. If it was so male dominated, the fact that I was a woman could actually help me stand out in the people making the hiring decisions' eyes.
Yeah, that's great. And I think the lesson for everybody there is to figure out what's your key component that differentiates you from the rest of the pack. You know, what makes me different and how can I use that to influence the people that I'm trying to find projects with?
Yeah, I love that. Yes, definitely. And yeah, I definitely didn't think of, I'm trying to find the right way to word this, but I do feel like there are things in people's lives and it could be like a past experience, or maybe it's the fact you don't have a college degree, or maybe it's the fact you didn't finish high school, but that could actually be your advantage. And you could actually spin that to make it something that makes you more memorable. Because I'm telling you right now, when I just think of even past podcast guests that I have on, the ones that stand out to me are the ones that have like overcome some kind of trial or obstacle, or, you know, it felt like the odds could have been really against them, but they actually spun that around and ended up doing more, you know, even though they were in a certain circumstance. So I think that you can definitely use whatever you want to call it, disadvantage or adversity, to your advantage when it comes to looking for roles and all of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we all come with such unique giftings and skills. For instance, the place that I work at, Show It, it's a desktop application, drag and drop website builder. But we run a conference every year, and I didn't even realize this when I applied for the job. And that actually made me a good candidate, coming from a musician church background where all I knew was conferences. And so, you know, without knowing it, my background helped me that my background that wasn't related in tech helped me to get a position in something that was tech related.
Yeah, that's such a great example. Yeah, I feel like there's so many people with stories like that where they have this this piece from their history that isn't tech related, but it somehow can relate to whatever tech job they're going after. And yeah, that's a great example.
Great. So you've got, you come back home in Pennsylvania, you start looking for side projects. What did the process look like for you? Were you able to find a lot right away? Did it take a lot of time? Where were you looking? What methods did you find worked, and what methods did you find didn't work so much?
Yeah. So I wish I had some story of how I, you know, spent months without any, you know, bites with what I was, you know, putting out on my fishing line, but that actually wasn't the case. I actually ended up getting my first position, like my little side gig or freelance position, relatively soon after I came back home. I can't recall the exact like time it was between, but it was only a matter of weeks, I would say. And the position that I ended up getting was in my local area. It was about a 30-minute drive from home, so it was a few towns over. And I was essentially just helping a web developer build an e-commerce site for this local business in my area. They were trying to put their inventory online, and I was just helping them do that. And the business, it's funny because it's really random, but it was a fireplace company. So they would sell different kinds of like fire features for indoors or backyards, and then other supplies to go with that. So I'm blanking on the name now, but like I don't know if pellet is the right word, but there are different things that you can put, like these fire materials you can put in your fire feature, and then you can like light it on fire and it looks really pretty, like things like that. So that was all the stuff that I was helping upload and get into the website and doing other stuff, like really simple stuff for this e-commerce site. And I found that once I had that first position under my belt in that website that was online, that I could say, I helped build that, right? I didn't build it by myself. I helped another person build it. But it became easier and easier to get new and new positions as time went on, because I started to have more experience, you know, in my toolkit that I could reference for future jobs. So as far as what worked and what didn't work, now, I feel like side gigs or like freelance gigs, whatever you want to call it. When I say that, I mean the same thing. It's all like smaller projects that you do for money versus a full-time job. There's definitely some different strategies. There are similarities, but what I found is that for these smaller jobs, it's usually a lot more informal. It's usually like they're not asking you for a resume, a cover letter, all of that. So what I would do is I used Craigslist, I think, pretty much exclusively when I was trying to find work. I started to then get referrals from people I worked with previously, and they would, you know, send me to their friend who also had a business or what have you. But yeah, that was pretty much all I used, was Craigslist and the word of mouth referrals. For Craigslist, I love using Craigslist because I could just send an email through Gmail. I would make it really short. I would just tell them like, well, it depended on what the listing was, if they asked for any specific information, but I would always keep it super short, just all about how I could help them and give them value for whatever problem they were trying to solve. And then I would usually link to some of the things I had done. So I would link to sites I built for myself, like not even because someone paid me to do it, just like personal websites if I didn't have like enough to list out. And then I started to, as I got more experience, also list the ones that I had built for clients. And I wouldn't even send a resume or a cover letter unless the listing specifically asked for it. So it was really easy. Or I shouldn't say really easy, because I did put time into crafting the email message to make sure it was really short, because I knew the person on the other end reading it was a small business owner, or they worked at a small business. They probably have a lot of these emails coming through and they don't have a ton of time. And I just wanted to get the information that was important to them across in a really short manner. And I would definitely track the listings I reached out to in a spreadsheet, just so I knew like what my response rates and if I ended up getting the project or not. So I would kind of like, I guess there's like software tools you can use to do this, like CRMs, client relationship managers, where you could have these like different sales pipelines or whatever. But I would just use a spreadsheet to track the different listings, if it worked out or not, if I heard back or not, and different stuff like that. So that's kind of what my process looks like.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. And there's a few things I love about that. Number one, when you'd reach out to them, it sounds like you really tried to understand where they were coming from. You know, so you knew they were small businesses, they didn't have a lot of time, so you cut straight to the point and showed proof of concept, and you were going into an avenue that probably a lot of people don't even consider Craigslist as a place that you'd be able to find a lot of good work. You know, they're going to the heavy hitters like Upwork, or you know, trying to find things on LinkedIn or ProFinder or whatever. But you found a great market, and you really just learned how to reach out to your specific client.
Yeah. And, you know, I can't speak a ton for what Craigslist is like in 2020. From what I've seen, because I have gone back and looked at the listings online recently, like in different cities in the United States, the way I used to back when I was actively applying for these different freelance gigs. And it looks very much similar to what I experienced in the past, like similar kinds of listings, similar kinds of opportunities. So it seems like not much has changed as far as what's available on there and the amount of things available on there and all of that. And yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I just really like Craigslist. I also like it because I can just send it as an email, because a lot of the other websites, you have to create a profile, or you have to, I don't know, there's just like a lot more barrier to entry. So I just found Craigslist to be the simplest. Now, saying that, I personally have hired contractors and freelancers on Upwork. So now that I have my own business, I've hired people on Upwork. I have two people actually actively doing stuff for me right now through Upwork. That's like the platform, and I pay them through there and all of that. So I do think Upwork can be totally effective as well. And I'm trying to think if there's any others that I've used to hire or get jobs on. And I don't think so. I think those are the main two, but there's, you know, a ton of different sites. And I feel like it just, I'm sure they all for the most part can work in some way. I think it just depends on what your preference is.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. This might be a sticky question, but I'd love to hear any nightmare stories you have with a client that you've been contracted by in the past.
Well, so fortunately, I've had some bad experiences, but nothing that crazy, thank goodness, because I never would do that much work without being paid for it. But there was one time where I was building a site for, it was like a friend of a friend of a friend, which should have maybe been more of a red flag, because I didn't really know these people that well. And I sort of maybe the way I sort of handled it was almost like it was a close like family member, but in reality, I didn't really know them all that well. So I probably should have had my guard up more. And I'm trying to remember exactly what happened. I think, it was almost like they were a middleman in some ways. And I was building this website for one of their clients, and they didn't specialize in websites, but they did this other stuff. And anyhow, so it just ended up just not, they just like stopped contacting me, I think, or like I was doing work for them, and then they just like kind of guess ghosted me is the right term. And then they didn't get back to me, and then I didn't know where they were. And then that was kind of that. And that, yeah, that was that. But fortunately, I hadn't done like too much work by the time that happened, and I had already been paid for some of it. So it wasn't like, you know, I'd built some like $10,000 website and then never got paid a dime. It was much smaller scale than that. But then after that experience, it actually taught me a lot about just running like things more like an actual business, and just making, like having more, I guess, like processes involved and contracts, and making sure I was more adamant about getting paid and getting paid on time and not doing work, especially if it was someone new who I didn't really know, you know, because I feel like if it's like a long-term client and they don't pay your invoice right away, that's totally different than someone new that you're working with, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I feel like most horror stories with clients starts with a friend of a friend of a friend. Because you put your guard down and you're like, oh man, this turns out to be like a really bad situation.
So. Yeah. I wasn't even doing work for them very long, but it was definitely very early in my, like learn to code freelance career. I'm not even sure if I had started learn to code with me at that point, honestly. So I started learn to code with me in 2014, about a year after I'd started learning to code. And it actually could have happened even a little bit before I started the site. I can't recall the exact timeline, but I do know it was definitely pretty early on.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Learn to Code with Me, because you actually have some really great resources for people who are looking to start side gigs in the tech space.
Yes, yes. And we're putting together more as we speak. So we hope to cover this topic in more detail in the future as well. But yeah, a few of the things that we have an article, and we're doing more articles. So we're going to have multiple articles in the future. We also have this really awesome ebook. And let me get the exact name so I don't read it incorrectly. Give me a second. 28 Ways to Earn a Side Income While Learning How to Code. And this goes through, as it says, 20 different ways. And we break them down by category. And we like tell you how you can get these jobs, what you need to do, like different skills to learn, what the average pay is, and all this other information for these 28 different things in tech. And probably like the most informative thing that we have is a training. It is a video training. It is about an hour and a half long total. And in that training, I go through a framework for finding technical side gigs. And it's not just your first gig. It is multiple gigs after that, because for most folks, they don't want to just have one. They want to have multiple and slowly, you know, build their way up over time. And I get into that. And I can give you the URLs to all this stuff when we're done, so we can link it in if you have show notes or whatever, and people can easily, yeah, find this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. Well, let's talk about pricing, because that seems to be a question with a lot of freelancers or people who have side hustles. How do you determine pricing? Have you done hourly? Do you suggest per project? And what has that looked like over the growth of your career as a freelancer?
Yeah. So I feel like there's a lot of different information out there. Heck, I know I can give you a link to this too. We actually have an article on the blog. It was a guest post that someone wrote for our site, but it's called like 10 different ways you can price your freelance projects or something like that. And it goes over 10 different like pricing strategies that you can use as a freelancer. But what I would use, and to this day, how I pay. So it's what's funny is I used to do all these side gigs, right? And I used to work for a bunch of clients, but now I have contractors who like work for me, and they either freelance full time, but there is one person, I'm trying to think if there's more, who I'm like her side gig. So she actually works full time at a really big tech job board, website, platform, whatever you want to call it. And she's a content writer for them. And then I first started working with her though before she had that job, and she still helps me 5 hours a week, which is really awesome because I love her. She's great. And it's funny because it feels so like it goes around like in a circle, because now her side gig is helping Learn to Code with me. But then I used to have these side gigs, and then we write about side gigs. Anyway, it's just funny to think about. I got a little sidetracked there. But as far as pricing goes, this is how I pay most of my contractors today. I would say actually all of them except for one, and the way I would charge when I was doing it would be hourly. So I just found hourly to be the most straightforward, especially when you're first starting out, because it can be really complicated to figure out how to charge for like a whole website, because it's hard to know how much time it may take you to do that. And I also found with hourly, it was a lot easier for me to slowly increase my rates over time. So what I would do is like every new client that I got, especially early on, I would slowly increase my rate. So I started out only charging like $15 an hour. And then the next rate I, or the next client I had, I maybe charged $18. And then I went to 22 and I slowly increased it over time. And I thought that to be like much easier when I was doing it hourly, just to kind of figure that out. And just for me, like it just made sense. If I work this many hours per week, I know I'm going to make this much. It was a lot easier just for me to track things and with finances and all of that. So I really like hourly. I also really like hourly as someone who's paying contractors. So that's definitely my preference.
Yeah. So you were doing side hustles for a while. Did it ever become more than just a side hustle? Did you ever go full time into what you were trying to do with coding?
Yeah. So I never had a side. Well, okay. Actually, Learn to Code with Me was a side hustle for 4 years until I decided to do it full time. So when I first started Learn to Code with Me, I was freelancing outside of Learn to Code with Me. And then I ended up getting a full-time job in tech at a company called Teachable, which is a software for people that are making and selling online courses. And I still did Learn to Code with Me on the side while I worked there, but I stopped doing other freelance projects because I probably would have lost my mind if I tried to do freelancing, Learn to Code with Me, and work full-time. And then when I left Teachable in 2018 to do Learn to Code with Me full-time, that became like my full thing then. But when I started working at Teachable, it wasn't a side gig first. So it wasn't like I was freelancing for Teachable and then I ended up getting hired full time. I actually just applied to a job on their website, funny enough, and ended up getting the position that way. But there are a lot of people, and heck, at Teachable, there were a lot of people who would start off as contractors, or they would start off as, yeah, I guess contract to hire is the right word, I think, to use. So they would be in a contract agreement, and then maybe after a month or 3 months, they would become a full-time employee if things worked well. So I think for people listening, like that is something really common that companies, maybe particularly startups, I'm not 100% sure that they'll do that, the contract to hire full-time role.
Yeah. So let's talk about people who are maybe trying to take the route that you have taken with going from, you know, starting with side gigs, you know, starting your own platform with Learn to Code with Me, and then going essentially full time. What would your advice be to somebody who's like, this is my dream. One day I want to be working full time at a tech company, but I don't quite know where to get started. What would you say?
Yeah. So for someone who wants to work full time at a tech company, like that's like their end goal, or at least their end goal for right now, I do think that doing side gigs is an awesome approach to baby stepping, or these little stepping stones into a full time tech position. Another great thing to do, though, if you're able to, is to start taking on more technical responsibilities at your current full-time job. So say if you work right now in customer support and there's an opportunity to do more tech-related support tickets that come in, like say if you are a customer support person for a software product or any kind of like technical product, if you could somehow like maneuver yourself to do those kinds of things like internally with the company, that's another great way, I think, to eventually pivot or transition into like a full-time tech role. Another thing that is helpful, I think, for people that want to eventually work full-time in tech and they're just trying to get experience. Well, there's actually a number of things. Another thing you could do is volunteer. So this, depending on how it looks, could have a few different It could look a few different ways, but two main ones come to mind. One would be like for a nonprofit or for a church or something to help them actually build their website. Now, with that, you may be working more in silo. I guess it depends on the organization and how everything is set up. Maybe it would give you the chance to work with other people, like more on a team environment if it was a group building the website. The other way I think of volunteering, though, is to actually like get out in the real world. Sorry, I'm laughing because it's just like get out in the real world. But maybe volunteering at like a hackathon and being the person who greets people at the door or does the name tags or registers people. And that way you're actually interacting with people in tech. So yes, you're volunteering. No, maybe you're not building like actual like projects to add to your portfolio, but you are in a room with a bunch of tech people and you're not just there attending, you're actually volunteering and contributing to the event. So that I think could be another really great way to, you know, make connections and get yourself in the industry. And that can ultimately help lead into some kind of full-time role. So the volunteering, the side gigs, that's another option. Building your own projects if you aren't able to find something paid or the volunteer one doesn't work out. And, oh, internal moves. So like doing like finding ways in your current job that you're doing to take on more technical responsibilities. And there's actually a number of ways to position yourself into a full-time role, but I think those are probably like my four favorite ones.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I know you'd mentioned to me one time, if you have a specific either place you want to work for, a career in mind, to begin looking at their job postings and see what types of skills and experience that they're looking for, and kind of reverse engineer what you're doing in your side gigs to make sure that you're lining up with what they're wanting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's like one of my favorite, I guess, strategies to do. And I wish this was something I did earlier on in my tech career journey, because I would have saved a lot of time and I would have had more of a plan in place. But essentially, it's, as you said, looking up like jobs that you think you'd like to do at companies you think you'd like to work for. I'd also strongly recommend looking for ones that are in the city you live in or the city you want to live in, because one thing that's interesting is there are certain like different companies use different technology stacks, and there are some cities, like geographically in the United States at least, where one city, like all the tech companies there may use a certain tech stack and then another city may be different. So that's why I tell people also look at the geographic location of the job opening and if it's somewhere you know want to be. And you can put together a little spreadsheet or list or Evernote or whatever you use to look at these different listings and find similarities amongst them. So maybe you're looking to be a web designer and you see certain skills like HTML, CSS. Maybe they're also mentioning certain tools like Adobe Illustrator or Photoshop or Sketch or one of the other ones out there. And you can, you know, after looking at a handful of listings, you can put together themes of what these positions you want are looking for. Then you could do some research if you're not familiar with some of the stuff on the list to see like if it's more beginner level or intermediate level or advanced level. And with that information, you can put together a little learning plan for yourself of the different skills you need to acquire and roughly the order that you can learn them in. And that way, it ensures that you're learning things that are aligned with your future career goals, and also not just to learn. So most of the time I tell people that when they don't know what to learn, like what skills and languages and software specifically, but you could also use that as what you just said to find side gigs or to build your own projects or to get volunteer work that ultimately aligns with whatever your greater goal is.
I've heard it said that if you try to freelance too soon when you're learning to code, it can actually be a negative thing. And I don't agree with this at all, but I want to just get your perspective, especially for everybody listening. Because not only you're having to learn how to code, but now you're learning how to project manage, you're learning how to be a salesman, you're learning how to work with clients rather than just learning the skills of coding. What would your response to that be?
So I can understand why, like if you're trying to jump into freelancing full-time, it could be a lot to learn and a lot to think about and do at once, because as you said, there are these other components to essentially managing your own business and managing multiple clients at once, project management, other sales, as you just said, things with legal stuff and contracts, and it could easily become perhaps a bit overwhelming, but if someone is doing freelancing on the side and they're only working with one or two clients at a time while they still do their main full-time job, or maybe they have other full-time responsibilities like they're a stay-at-home parent or they're in school full-time or, you know, something else, I don't really think that would be would be a risk. I feel like there's way more upside than downside as far as learning how to work with clients, getting this experience that you could reference on your resume or in future job interviews. Also, tons of work can come just through referrals. So these early clients that you have could bring you more clients in the future. And especially if someone is working full-time and they're doing this, I wouldn't expect them to have multiple clients at once. I feel like it would, you know, they have other full-time commitments. They would be doing just, you know, one or two clients at a time.
Well, I think one of the things when it comes to ultimately finding a lasting career as a developer or program software engineer, it's more than just about your ability to code or the technical skills that you have. It's also about these soft skills that are actually super important. They're actually a huge part of the process, and you can't learn those things by just sitting in front of your laptop going through a course or hacking out some application or website. So I think it's super important to do like what you've done with finding side gigs and freelance work.
Yeah, 100%. And even if a person isn't going out and doing volunteer work or paid side gigs or what have you, 1000% agree that you just like need to step away from the course or the tutorial. I love online courses, don't get me wrong. But if you're working on something like in the real world, I'm doing little air quotes right now, you're going to learn so much more than if you're just following a course step by step. So that could even just be building your own website for, you know, whatever. It really doesn't even need to be super valuable. Just building something on your own that you're not following a step-by-step guide that's taking you through.
Well, Laurence, thank you so much for being on Self-Made Web Designer today. It's been so encouraging to hear you, and I've learned so much, and I know everybody listening has. So just one more time, can you tell us how to connect with you?
Yes, definitely. And thank you again, Chris, for having me on. It was a pleasure to talk to you, as always. The best way to find me is just at my website. It's learntocodewith.me. And then as far as social media goes, I feel like I usually just tell people now to find me on Instagram, but I'll have to be honest, I'm not super active on any social media right now because at the time of this recording, I have moved relatively recently. I'm also planning a wedding for myself. I have to specify, I'm like planning, wait, not for someone else. I'm planning my own wedding, and a number of other like life things are going on. So I'm not as active on social media right now, but typically most times of the year, you can find me on Instagram, and that is just my name, which is Laurence Bradford.
Awesome. Well, we're looking forward to seeing more of what's to come with Learn to Code with Me and everything else that you're doing, Laurence. Thanks again.
Thank you again for having me.
Wow, what a great conversation with Laurence Bradford of Learn to Code with Me. If you haven't already, I want to encourage you to visit her website. It's learntocodewith.me. You'll find a lot of great free resources and content to help you along the way on your journey to becoming a self-made web designer. Hey, we've got more episodes coming up right away. That's right. We're launching with 4 episodes for you to consume and enjoy. If you haven't already, I want to encourage you again, go ahead, subscribe, leave a comment, leave a rating, and get ready for the next episode with Mr. Anthony Garone, who's going to talk about what it takes to break into the tech industry and get a career when you're just getting started. I will see you in the next episode.